When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
I've always watched him, you know, just getting a chance to see him up close, even when he started playing at Oklahoma. So met him a couple times. Great dude. Obviously, all the accolades that come with it are very well earned based on his body of work, his resume. You know, he can beat you in a variety of ways. There's a reason why it was kind of understood that, you know, he would be the number one overall pick, and I think that's been earned and merited. You watch the tape, there's a lot of really good things that you've seen. He's got really good players around him. Obviously, I think Shane does a really good job. So we have to do a great job of you know, being ready to go, because Caleb can beat you in a variety of ways.
That's some generic kind coach speak, as we hear in the week leading up to an NFL game. Sean McVay getting pretty good at that. So let's talk about him and talk about the Rams with somebody who describes the Rams for a living. JB Long is on Twitter at JB_Long. The Rams radio play-by-play announcer is joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. JB, thank you for joining us.
Dan, Big Ant, good morning. Thank you for the invitation. I'm here to bring you plenty of generic broadcaster speak.
He's good at all of it. He can give you generic. He can give you alliteration. James Brown can certainly show you the versatility of what a sage veteran can do on the air.
So where are the Rams as far as their health? They seem to be missing people all over the field right now.
Yeah, decimated on the offensive line and at receiver in particular. No Cooper Kupp, no Puka Nacua. They came into this year with receiver probably being their deepest position. And they, for the first time this year, will have the same five starting offensive linemen in consecutive weeks. So I think the arrow is pointing upward there. Without Darius Williams at corner, he started the year on injured reserve, potentially their strongest cover corner. That's been a deficiency. Three straight weeks, you know, turning loose a 100-yard receiver with a touchdown, if not more. So that's a quick thumbnail on where the Rams are. I do see some similarities to the Bears, particularly in the department of like slow starts. And I think that lack of cohesion, especially on offense, is a byproduct.
So you could certainly make a case that the Rams could be 0-3 by the furious comeback they had in the fourth quarter in the previous game. You could also make a case the Rams could be 2-1. You know, based off a quality performance in the opening game against Detroit, does either version of that seem closer to who they've been through the first 3 weeks?
Well, Detroit was a coin toss, right? You know, they go down the field and get the walk-off touchdown. So that's like an overtime rule wrinkle. I thought the Rams competed really well, having basically lost three offensive linemen over the course of that game, in addition to Puka Nacua. I think kind of like the Bears having led for what, like less than 18 minutes or so combined this season. I think 0-3 is probably the truer reflection. If it's like Will Levis who gifted the Bears their win, it's probably Ronnie Bell dropping a ball for the 49ers to kind of open that door of possibility for the Rams to rally from down two touchdowns. But I would have a hard time making a good faith case that any team should be 2-1 or better, given the fact that they've trailed by two touchdowns in all three of their games.
Part of what we're dealing with here is the chasm between expectations and performance right now for the Bears. We thought it would look a whole lot better, regardless of outcome. We just thought it would be cleaner and better, and maybe those of us who've watched too much Bears football understood that there was no real good reason to think that, but it's a battle between heart and head in that regard. What is the similar situation regarding the Rams' performance relative to expectations?
Well, to be laughed off the score here, I'm a big like Thomas Brown fan. I like Shane Waldron. I do think that there's a better version of this offense in this story that Chicago will see before this year is over. I know a lot has been said about the best scenario that a 1-1 has ever walked into. I think there's some truth to that, and getting Keenan Allen back will make a huge difference. I know offensive line play is the issue. Expectations is kind of a tale of two stories for me. I think externally for the Rams coming into this year, they were pretty high because everyone erroneously falls into the offseason trap of thinking that progress is linear in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. So given the fact that they far exceeded expectations last year, won 7 of their last 8 games, double-digit victories, like everyone just figured, okay, they're going to build on that. They drafted defense. It's going to look even better this year. They're going to compete for a division. I think I had a more tempered expectation for this year for no other reason than the Rams just lost the best player in franchise history, Aaron Donald. And that is a Canton-sized void on their defensive line, which I think they've done really well to fill to their best of their ability in just one offseason. But it's no surprise to me that they're among the most porous defensive teams in the National Football League through 3 weeks, in part because of how young they are and how green they are, in part because of their injuries, but also because I think they played 3 of the best offenses in Detroit, Arizona, and San Francisco.
You can see JB Long at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Score middays, Dan Bernstein and Anthony Herron. And there's been so much conversation, you alluded to a moment ago, about the current Bears offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, previous offensive coordinators who've been tasked with trying to nurture the skills and talents of first-round pick quarterback for the Bears in recent years. So a lot of that angst in Chicago is built up in there. You get to watch Sean McVay, one of the 2 or 3, most folks would say, perhaps the best play caller in the National Football League. What are your observations about what makes Sean McVay so effective, so impactful as a play caller in game?
Yeah, I mean, he's a football savant, but there's a lot of those. And I think Sean would tell you that he gets too much credit for his football prowess, right? Like, you put him in a room with his peers, and I think he's sharp, I think he's special, but like, they all speak the same language. They've all got largely the same toolkit. I think what's always made Sean special is, you know, just he's a force of nature. His passion, his care factor, and his ability to communicate. Like, imagine walking in to an NFL facility at 30 years of age, having never been a head coach, right, and needing to make a bond with a bunch of players whose livelihoods are on the line. Like, to see him do that in just 1 year was one of the most memorable things I've ever seen in sports. And to see him mature as a man now and to go through multiple chapters of this coaching career, which is now on its 8th year, has been probably the privilege of my career. In terms of a play caller, I think, to answer your question more specifically, his ability to reinvent himself over and over and over again. At once, he's one of the more stubborn people in the National Football League in terms of just living and dying by 11 personnel, 3 receiver sets. You know, when he gets something that he likes, he takes it to the nth degree. But then you see a situation like last week where he's kind of, you know, reinventing the Rams in 2024 on the fly because they don't have Puka. They don't have Cooper Kupp. The things that make them special, marrying run and pass together with everything looking the same pre-snap, he realized that's no longer the strength of this roster as constituted. So I'm going to get an extra tight end up from the practice squad. I'm going to put some 12 out there. I'm going to bring Tutu Atwell back into the fold. I'm going to get Kyren Williams going, run and pass, take shots vertically. Like, that's not something that we've seen in the better part of a year and change now, but they were able to go to it in 1 week of game planning and beat one of the best teams in the National Football League because of his aptitude.
And because of your vantage point in being here for every step of the way, they transition from St. Louis, they come to L.A., you're watching the youthful version of Sean McVay, still fairly youthful, but to take over a franchise as kind of the, you know, the wunderkind when he took things over, we're watching a head coach kind of on the opposite end of that spectrum here in Chicago, and Matt Eberflus, who was a longtime assistant at the collegiate level, at the professional level, well-regarded defensive mind, and the Bears' defense, of course, exceptional again this season, but then managing his staff, managing the personalities on the roster, overseeing those elements of it. It sounds like you're describing Sean McVay as a guy who not only tactically is brilliant, but in managing the people in that organization as a leader, he's been exceptional in that regard also. How has that part played out for a guy who got the gig at a really young age?
Yeah, Anthony, that's really well said. And this is the part in the conversation where I always kind of interject, like, Sean's not perfect. You know, he's had dark moments. I remember the frigid night in 2018 when Vic Fangio, like, put an absolute lock on his offense and Jared Goff. and changed the course of that entire year because Bill Belichick borrowed from it in the Super Bowl and the Rams didn't score a touchdown then either, right? So Sean would be the first to tell you that he's started in the red zone in his profession because of his family history, that he's been granted opportunities that many of his peers have not. But again, I think that self-awareness, the fact that he can be one of those special people that when he's in the room, he makes you feel seen, I think would allow him to have success in whatever chosen profession he ultimately went down. Now, it happens to be football, but I think he'd be a great librarian, a wonderful lawyer, a good teacher, maybe a great surgeon. Heaven forbid he ever go into politics, but maybe that could be a thing too. Like, because of his diligence, his aptitude, and his communication skills, I just think he would rise to the top.
We're talking with J.B. Long, Rams radio play-by-play announcer, as you're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And I was going to say something when you mentioned that the Rams lost the greatest player in Rams history in Aaron Donald. And I was about to think, hold on a second. And I'm starting to sort of catalog in my head and going through, hey, we got Marshall Faulk and Merlin Olsen and Eric Dickerson. And there's some other players who weren't half bad. But you know what? You're right. The more I think about it, I don't really even think it's that close that Aaron Donald is by far the best player. Deacon Jones, even like he may be the best defensive tackle of all time.
Yeah, there's a lot of recency bias in there, Dan. Right, and I come through this with 21st century lenses. I get it, but being exposed to him as I have been, his credentials speak for themselves. And I would say this. And I would love to get Anthony's take on this too, on or off the air. To play that position and to basically have not one but two walk-off plays in the NFC Championship game and Super Bowl, like that is unprecedented. That's like hitting the game-winning home run, okay, in the ALCS and the World Series. But you do that at defensive tackle, a position where you don't even get to touch the football. And he clinched the NFC Championship against the Niners, a Super Bowl against the Bengals. Like, that whole season orbited around his prime and completed his trophy case. And to be his best when his best was required, to me, kind of tipped the scales so that I can confidently come on your show and say something like that now.
It's it was the modern iteration of Warren Sapp. You know, Warren Sapp sort of, you know, defined a generation of three technique interior defensive linemen, and Aaron Donald took that, you know, that skill set, put it in a box, shook it up, and then kind of, you know, ramped a little bit extra juice into it, and then, you know, sustained it with a great organization for a while here too. So hard to argue with what JB's talking about there.
JB, you mentioned something earlier I wanted to double back to about you are a fan of Shane Waldron's work?
Yes.
Why?
I appreciate him as a man, as a person. I know how much he meant to Sean, and what they did together. I think he did some good things in Seattle. I'm a big fan of Pete Carroll too, but I think that regime needed to change for the Seahawks in order for them to take the next step. And I think that's been borne out, but I think there's a version of Shane's offense with Caleb Williams and with the skill players they have here that's going to be super explosive. Clearly, I'm hoping for the Rams' sake that doesn't come to life here on Sunday, but I believe it's closer more than, you know, farther and distant into the future. And if I'm wrong, you can have me back in December and laugh at me. That's okay.
No, it's all right. I don't want to go too far down the road of like amateur personality profiling, but there are people in workplaces that say that, you know, introverts need to be managed differently, and or their thoughts can be applied differently. The only thing about Waldron is he seems a little awkward, a little nervous, and maybe it's just being an introvert, but I'd like to sort of unlock how he relates to players.
Yeah, and it's tough for me to project that onto his situation in Chicago, and especially with a rookie quarterback, because he was one piece of the brain power in the room, which is how it's always worked with Sean, right? As the head coach, as the architect, but ultimately as the play caller, he has the direct line through the communication system to the quarterback. That's how it was with Jared Goff. It's how it continues to be with Matthew Stafford, who in essence, is a second offensive coordinator on the field. So Shane working with Goff and McVay, working with Geno in Seattle, now working with Caleb, each one of those dynamics is different. And I'm not sure how it's currently functioning. Clearly, the results are not what anyone anticipated early on. But I would give it another cycle, another week, month, whatever you want to assess that period in before forming any judgment, because I know what stability means, right? And I know the Bears have not had it at coach, coordinator, or quarterback for so long that I would hate to see that vicious cycle repeat itself before we really get a sense of what Caleb and Shane are capable of together.
A 36-year-old Matt Stafford at this season in his career is a slightly different version of the Stafford that he was early in his career in Detroit. And then he got up and had this additional, you know, infusion of life in his career with this act that we've seen with the Rams. Now he's got this beat up offensive line in front of him and his two best skill position players aren't around either. And he's still kind of finding a way. What does this version of Matt Stafford so far this season look like to you?
Yeah, look, I'm a huge fan of Jared Goff too, and he had some great years in Los Angeles. But what we're seeing right now is why the Rams ultimately felt like they had a chance to upgrade that position, because he has the superpower of elevating the other 10 around him. He doesn't have to have the best offensive line to thrive. He doesn't have to have Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua active to put up numbers. Like Matthew Stafford, I think right now is threading the perfect needle between knowing that he has one of the five best arms on the planet, but also playing at the most mature, sensible, not cautious, but like strategically lethal pattern of quarterbacking that I think he ever has. He's always had the reputation as a gunslinger, someone who can be a kingmaker for the like of Megatron and others. But right now, these last couple of years, I think he's put together some really MVP caliber moments because of his decision-making, because of his ball protection, and especially because what he's being asked to do pre and post snap. I think he's recaptured the imagination of the football cognoscenti, which is why, even though his resume is still lacking in some key areas, I think he's now on the yes side of that border between here and Canton. I think he's a future Hall of Famer.
Caleb's favorite quarterback. He said it multiple times. Caleb Williams, his number one quarterback in the league is Matthew Stafford.
JB Long, this is a delight. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Anything to cover a segment so that you don't have to have too much more chatter with Anthony Heron.
Hey, come on. But
you guys, as you know, have a great following. In fact, before I even came on, I'm staying with some friends here on the South Side, and their parents were texting them saying, did you know that your friend JB is going to be on with Dan and Big Ant? They said, yes, I did know that. He's down in my kitchen waiting to take that meal. So.
Did you say like, you know that I'm also the play-by-play guy of the Rams?
No, I'm just here to visit and play a little golf and make sure I get a Pequod's before I leave.
Pequod's.
It reminds me of like when my parents will say something like, why didn't you tell us that you were on Channel 11? You were on TV. I'm like, I'm on the radio 4 hours a day. And they're like, yes, I know, but this was Channel 11.
Yeah, right.
JB, thank you.
All right, Dan, thank you. Love you, Big Ant. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Thanks, bro.
All right, Sammy P., Sam Panjatovic of BetQL Daily, the partner of Joe Ostrowski, is going to sub for our regular wagertainment guru when we come back on The Score. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. We want to make sure that you know what the numbers are so you can be on the right side of all of them. And usually you are hearing Joe Ostrowski's familiar music right now, but now you're going to talk to his partner on BetQL. He and his phone just dropped. Okay, well, we will be talking to him.
I have faith. It's going to take place.
Yes, but in live radio, such things happen.
Sammy future.
P. Sammy P. is on Twitter at SP Shoot.
So here's what's going on, guys. Our phones just crashed. So, yeah, we're just kind of hanging loose right now until everything resets.
All right, so this ain't Sam's fault. It's on the Russians.
No. Yeah, this is not on Sam or his phone.
Oh, no, like my whole phone screen here just bailed. And like,
I think we lost internet because everything just kind of disconnected.
What?
I don't know. It's possible. You might be right. I was going to say, I feel like my internet is
the Wi-Fi is not working. This is great. Everything's going so well right now.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can see. We're on air. Okay. We're on air. Yeah. Right. This is all analog, what we're doing right here.
Yeah, let's go. Let's like go back to my first year. Yeah. Now it's like 1995 again.
The Twitch stream probably isn't doing so well
right now. Let's get some newspapers in here and get the big old baseball encyclopedia.
So on SiriusXM might be in trouble, but terrestrial radio, this will stand the test of time.
Yeah, why is the Wi-Fi out?
Like, I don't know.
Is the building under siege or something?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time,
right? Is it like the Nakatomi Plaza? They got some,
welcome to the party, pal.
You're right. Hans Gruber's henchmen are up there cutting the wires with a chainsaw.
Oh, man. There's been very few better villains. Have there been any? Like the Aaron Donald conversation.
What?
Who's been a better bad guy?
The Joker.
You're talking about Hans Gruber?
Yeah.
Well, this is a subgenre of bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're talking about the Mount Rushmore of Hannibal Lecter and Darth Vader and all that, that's a little different. But where Hans Gruber was charming, he was debonair and you kind
Alan Rickman, yeah, yes, I was blanking yes, on Alan Rickman's name.
That was his sort of coming out party, mm-hmm. Alan Rickman. We didn't know who he was, and everyone's like, "Ooh, who's this guy?"
Right,
and he was just cool.
Yep, he's handsome, he's cool, he's hilarious, and menacing.
And menacing, could also and pull off menacing. Also importantly, not a terrorist.
Mm.
And the fact that, as she pointed out later, as Holly Gennaro McClain points out later, you're just a common thief.
Okay.
I'm an exceptional thief.
Yeah. He was amazing in Robin Hood also, in Prince of Thieves. He was a great villain in that one. I mean, he was basically Hans Gruber if he were trying to kill Robin Hood.
And he was Severus Snape.
Hans Gruber. Very few. Alan Rickman might top my movie bad guy power rankings. I don't know that anyone's pulled that off better than
nice
Alan Rickman.
Suit. John Phillips, London. I have two myself. Word has it, Arafat buys his there. If you really like Alan Rickman,
okay.
have you seen the movie Galaxy Quest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a bad guy.
No, he's one. But he is sort of a... No, he's not a bad guy. Spoiler alert. But there is a documentary about the making of Galaxy Quest.
Okay.
An oral history. And they interview pretty much everybody. Because that is a sleeper.
So it's not a mockumentary. It's a true documentary.
It's a sleeper favorite movie of mine.
I can see you pulling off a mockumentary.
I think I've tweeted it before. I'll send it to you. If you're a fan of Galaxy Quest, you'll love this.
Okay.
So apparently Alan Rickman had very little respect for Tim Allen.
Imagine that.
He just didn't really, they didn't work together all that well.
Okay.
And the tension.
I would imagine Alan Rickman was like a classically trained thespian or something like that.
Of course he is.
Right?
That's why all these Englishmen, that's why Benedict Cumberbatch and Eddie Redmayne, because they all do stage.
Yeah.
Right?
He shows up, Tim Allen's the big star of the movie and grunting or whatever else he's doing.
In the scene when he has to confront Enrico Colantoni's Mathazar and explain to him that they're not real, and he has to tell him and let down this person who's worshipped his character and thinking that he really could come save the galaxy, and he has to tell him, and they did multiple takes, and Enrico Colantoni is also a trained, I mean, really wonderful actor, and so he asked the director, and they filmed the scene, and they cut print, they get the take they wanted of him emotionally trying to explain he's not who they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Tim Allen says to the director, he said, I don't know what's going on, but I feel bad and I have to go back to my trailer. I need some time to myself. And I just don't feel good right now. So I said, of course, Tim, go ahead. And apparently, Alan Rickman leans over to the AD next to him and goes, apparently, he's just first experienced acne. like, yes, that's what we do in this job.
Apparently, the capability to do more than grunt made him uncomfortable.
I was howling. I was absolutely howling when I just he's just experienced acting. All right, let's talk to Sammy P. Everything's working again, I guess. He's at SP Shoot on Twitter, co-host of BetQL Daily, 8 to 11 weekdays on the BetQL Network with us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Sammy P., good to talk. How are you?
Good, Dan, and thanks for having me. You know, I had this joke all queued up about Wally Pipp and Joe O, and then Ray texts me and says, the phones just went down. So I go, oh, great, perfect.
Well, blame Joe O. He didn't want to get Wally Pipped.
What's the Bears win total doing right now? Where is the betting zeitgeist on the Bears' fortunes in general?
So remember, this was a team before the draft, before they take Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze. It's a win total of about 8, and that was a juice date. People were liking the over. After the draft, literally night of the draft, they move it to 8.5, and the hype starts to build. And as you guys know, Hard Knocks happens. Oh, God, about the Bears. Oh, Bears. And, you know, rookie quarterback, new offensive system, a lot of new pieces, a line that's still kind of questionable. They sort of fell flat the first couple of games. Win total right now, and you can bet this all over the country, 7.5. So it's come down a full win in 3 games.
Wow.
The division is maybe the best in football. When you think about it in totality, with Minnesota being as good as they've been, you know, Green Bay is getting Jordan Love back, and Detroit is, in my power ratings, the highest rated team right now in the NFC, given the injuries to San Fran and Philly. But to answer your question, win total right now in the Bears, 7.5.
I wish I bet sports, because I saw all that coming. This division is exceptional. Sam Darnold is playing good football right now. The whole Matt Eberflus as coach of the year thing, like he was the betting favorite for that at one point also. Is he still?
No, Kevin O'Connell is the hands-down favorite right now, and it makes total sense. Minnesota, to me, week in, week out, is going to be the most prepared and the most ready to go on the sidelines. I mean, you have a former head coach in Brian Flores running your defense. He is a demon at scheming and studying tape. They are always ready on defense. And then you got Kevin O'Connell under the McVay tree. I know we're going to talk about McVay here in a second. But O'Connell and Flores, to me, in terms of like offense, defense, that may be the best combination in the league right now. And we're seeing that full throttle. Now, can Sam Darnold keep it up? That's a different conversation for a different day. But Kevin O'Connell right now in Minnesota, about 4-1, 5-1 to be coach of the year.
What Bears prop intrigues you for this week?
They are betting under DeAndre Swift, Dan, and they are betting it furiously. So this was a number on Wednesday. It was 37.5 rushing yards. And I listened to your guys' station and all that, and you've chronicled how they may go in a different direction in the running back room. And honestly, it'd probably be about time. He's been horrible. The line hasn't been great, but you look at his 3 games, 13 carries, 20 yards, 14 carries, 18 yards, 10 carries, 30 yards. He's got to do some work too. You know, he's got to churn butter and get upfield, and he's just not doing that. So they came in and they bet under 37.5 rushing yards on Swift. It's down to 35.5, but could we not envision a game where he gets a carry or two for 3 yards and they just say, all right, let's go to Johnson. Let's go to Herbert. Let's move on from this experiment that clearly isn't working. And this is also a guy that has been on 3 teams in 3 years, from Detroit to Philly to Chicago. So maybe it's him. Maybe it's not the line.
He's got a lot of exciting traits, but him as your main rock toter, that hasn't shown consistency for production in his career up to this point. All the excitement that was there around Caleb Williams during the preseason, he statistically has gotten stronger each individual game so far. Where does the betting market sort of see Caleb in the scope of some of those preseason expectations? Is there a prop that indicates whether or not confidence in him is starting to wane?
He was such a substantial favorite to be the offensive rookie of the year. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was plus 130, plus 150 before he even played a game. And that's unfair to expect that from a rookie quarterback. You know, a $100 bet at the time only made you 130, collected 230. And that was something that I never understood. Well, au contraire, because of the rise of Jaden Daniels, and Malik Nabers had, 12 more catches last night for 115 yards. Those are the sexy guys in the market. So if Caleb Williams was a stock, this would be, I would argue, the time to buy. You can bet him right now at 8-1 to be the rookie of the year. Is it going to happen? I don't know. But man, 8-1 is a whole lot better than +130, +150. And if he comes out on Sunday and throws for 2 or 3 touchdowns against, I'm sorry, a horrible Rams team, horrible. McVay, like, give me one reason people like the Rams other than it's McVay or it's the Bears being the Bears. There's no edge for the Rams in this game. Maybe at quarterback, but his line is mangled, and he's got no Cup and no Nacua. So if we look up on Monday, and you guys are eating victory chicken as you do on Mondays, and Caleb has 250 yards and 2-3 touchdowns, I'll tell you what, that 8-1 is going to be long gone on Caleb Williams.
I think those big plays are there, too, and I don't know if that's something that can be bet, but it looks like that the Rams' defense is just waiting to give up some of these long strikes that the Bears have not stopped hunting for.
So I look at sumersports.com, S-U-M-E-R sports.com. It's free. It's very analytically driven, so you'll love it, Dan. In terms of EPA per play, expected points allowed per play, the Rams' defense is 31 out of 32 in the NFL. It's hard to get much worse than that.
Wow.
And I think a lot of the narratives in the summer around the Rams, and I heard this on one national show in July or August, oh, they'll be fine. They can replace Aaron Donald. Shut up, moron. You can't replace Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald, I was in the back of the Superbook in Vegas one year, and I asked the guy who's been booking bets for 30 years, I go, who are the most important defensive players to the line? And his three names that he gave me were Aaron Donald, Lawrence Taylor, and Deion Sanders. Those guys are all worth 2.5, 3 points to the line. Oh, you can replace Aaron Donald. Shut up. No, you can't.
College games that intrigue you. You're looking at a slate and wondering where some value is. What does that menu look like for tomorrow?
I've gotten a lot of texts this week about Illinois. Why is Illinois getting so many points? They're undefeated, Bielema ball, yada, yada, yada. Yet the big bets in Vegas are all on Penn State. The little bets, the Marge Simpsons of the world, are betting 25, 50 bucks on Illinois. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're seeing substantial bets, nickels, dimes, $5,000 bets. Those are on Penn State. And I like Illinois. I think they're clearly formidable, and it's been a weird 2 decades to be an Illinois fan. But if they go down 14-0 in this game, they're cooked. You know, Bielema needs to take the early lead, go up 7-0, maybe force a fumble and muck this up, play to a rock fight, like a 21-18 final or something like that, something weird, something very Penn State-Illinois. Penn State is running the ball down people's throats. And their schedule hasn't been difficult, but they are destroying these teams, guys, destroying them. Sharpest guys I know laid Penn State 17 and 17.5. So just be careful if you're on that Illinois side. And I took the points with Colorado. I don't really like Colorado. I don't really care for a lot of things that they do. But 14 is a lot of points against a UCF defense that can't stop the pass. Shadur can throw. They got skill. They got speed. They're going to be able to put points on the board. So that's a big number for Colorado. I like 14 there, getting the points.
What once was Pac-12 after dark has become Big Ten after dark, where Oregon's going to be on the road at UCLA super late, at least super late here in Chicago, 10 Central Time start, which means I'm going to be on the air really late after that game ends when I'm covering it on the Big Ten Network. Have you gotten into the after dark thing? Do folks tend to get weird with the after dark games in a betting perspective?
Oh, there's nothing in my world like getting that text at 12 o'clock midnight on the East Coast. Hey, what do we think about Hawaii? ? And I'm like, God, stop gambling. Stop gambling. You didn't want to bet Hawaii at noon, but at midnight, you're 3 jacks in and you're fired up. You go, oh, I like Hawaii in the over. Yeah, of course you do. It's a big number. You know, Oregon opened 23. Now it's 25.5. We know that UCLA is not good, and their coach, I think, is questionable. I won't bet the game. I think it's fascinating that you have Oregon at UCLA, and the summer number was 17, and now we're already at 25.5. That is a big adjustment in about a month. UCLA is horrendous, but I don't want to lay that number on the road. It's too big for me.
Sammy P, good stuff. We'll have you back. I don't know if you're going to Wally Pip the guy, but you acquitted yourself wonderfully. Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care.
That's Sammy P at SP Shoot if you want to follow him on Twitter. Next up, we've got High Noon. I have a story that if you are a collector of sports memorabilia, this may blow your mind because I am not really a collector. I have a collection of stuff that but I kind of stopped collecting, and I've never heard of anything like this before, what has been unearthed.
Why did you stop? Did you run out of space?
No, I just stopped buying cards.
Oh, okay.
I just had my childhood collection of things. I had it appraised. It's got a little bit of value, and it just sort of sits.
Yeah. Well, for me, there's a cause. There's a drive going on out there for something that's not in big supply anymore that I'd like to let folks know about.
We'll do that next on The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
Time for High Noon. It is a shortened show leading you up to Cubs baseball today, but we started out by talking a little bit of music derailed us in an unexpected way before we got into Bears football. And Mercedes Lewis kind of saying, this isn't Pop Warner, go ahead and coach us, because the leadership council they got out of their meeting and they provided the scroll on which they had written their various complaints. And I think this is a head coaching issue as much as it is a Shane Waldron thing. Fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it. You shouldn't have veteran players talking about any kind of communication issues with the coach right now. We talked to J.B. Long of the Rams, their radio play-by-play guy. We talked to Sammy P to get some wagertainment stuff. It's
We are actually in the midst right now of a blood shortage. The national blood inventory plummeted more than 25% over the summer because of some big heat. And so there were less blood drives and less inventory of blood that's available right now. So being in the midst of a blood shortage, now that the weather is getting a little bit more mild, there's a lot of different blood drives that are going on right now. And so I'm part of the Big Ten Conference in a wide variety of ways as an alum. And so the Big Ten has actually launched the We Give Blood drive. So over the next few months between now and the month of December, they're urging people to go out, donate blood, post a picture, use the hashtag We Give Blood. You can actually claim which institution, which school you're donating. If you're an alum of which school you're representing within your blood donation. And eventually it'll get to the point once we get past December where the school with the most blood donors, the most Big Ten schools, and that raises the most money, that has the most donations associated with them, then there'll be $1 million fund that'll be donated by a particular company on behalf of the Big Ten Conference. So hopefully everybody goes out. I mean, it was like a 25% drop in blood donation earlier this year. So, you know, anyone who's out there who's ever had to experience a blood transfusion, who knows what it means when you have to go to the hospital and you're hoping they're going to have blood available for you, whether it's because of your blood cell counts or anything else, it's a kind of a critical time, according to the American Red Cross. So go out, donate blood, whether you're a Big Ten alum or not.
I saw this on the New York Times, and every next paragraph, my jaw was dropping here. There's a guy named Tim Banaszak. Tim Banaszak decided that he was going to purchase a collection of sports cards and memorabilia from a quiet hobbyist who lived in a neighboring town in rural Virginia. So he did. He bought this collection that is now known to be quite possibly the largest private collection of sports cards and more in the world by a wide margin. It is estimated to include 20 million cards, though other visitors have pegged the number even higher.
Good grief.
The previous largest private baseball card collection was 2.8 million. The largest collection of non-sports trading cards is 32,809 items. This is probably more than 20 million. And what makes it more notable is the lack of a public profile. For years, it sat in a concrete outbuilding behind a low-slung ranch house on a wooded country road. Two members of the reclusive seller's family said the collection had been painstakingly accumulated over more than 50 years, and that the seller had purchased whole collections from other buyers at times. Speaking on the condition of anonymity to protect the seller's identity, they declined to answer emailed questions other than to say, we're happy the collection went to someone who appreciates and enjoys the collection. Tim Banaszek declined to disclose how much he paid, and he doesn't know what it contains. So the estimated total is unknown. It's in a roadside storefront 20 miles outside of Richmond with paper taped over the windows. The New York Times is the first to see it in its entirety, and the picture that they show looks like the final shot in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah?
In that warehouse. That's what it looks like. The collection includes every Topps baseball set produced from 1954 to 2016. Three decades worth of completed sets of basketball and football cards. There are an estimated 10,000 Michael Jordan cards, 6,000 Kobe Bryant cards, 4,000 LeBron James cards, at least five different Babe Ruth cards, not to mention Ty Cobb, Lou Gehrig, and Joe DiMaggio cards. Authenticated tobacco cards of Walter Johnson and Christy Mathewson from the 1909 and 1911 set. Hundreds of signed balls and bats. Rolled up sheets of uncut cards. Game-used catching gear worn by Hall of Famer Bill Dickey.
This is priceless.
It extends beyond sports. Includes original authenticated postcards of Marilyn Monroe from the 1950s, sealed boxes of cards from Star Trek, Star Wars, and Pokemon, turn-of-the-century cigarette cards featuring images of stage actors popular at the time. They've tried to catalog it, but Banaszek says he's opened only 5 to 10% of it. His friend began inventorying the cards with a scanner and stopped after 80,000. So there are boxes and boxes of cards with uniform pieces, bat pieces, signed pieces we haven't gone through. So Banaszek he wants to make it fun, is what he said.
He's going to open a museum?
He's the founder and chief executive of ISC Sales, a distributor for Walgreens, CVS, and retailers. And this was during the COVID pandemic. He just started purchasing boxes of baseball cards and posting about it. And he just kept going. So they have no idea what it's worth. They don't really understand what, now that they've made car trips and U-Hauls to move everything into this empty antique store, and he wants to consider how they're going to showcase this. So first they need to get it may take how many appraisers,
I mean,
over how much time.
How do you put a value on that?
I don't know. I don't know. But they don't know what they're going to do. He's trying to maybe showcase the entire collection, taking it on a tour as an interactive exhibit. They may culminate it with a residency in Las Vegas. They want to have a reality show and maybe a series of podcasts that they want to build stories behind the different cards, and the reality show in which people could be reconnected to long-lost cards or reunited with family members via the cards. All Banaszek says is, I don't want to discover everything. There's the discovery writ large, which is amazing, and it gets my heart palpitating, but it's what's still in there that's fun. Let's have fun.
Wow. I mean, to be able to purchase that is one thing, and the confidence that goes into purchasing that sort of sight unseen from the sounds of it, but then the gold mine, whatever's beyond a gold mine, the adamantium mine.
Right, I don't even know it. A good question. How do you get it insured?
Yeah.
How do you get it? You can't get it. Like, Lloyd's of London couldn't even put a tag on it. How do you get this insured from fire or an earthquake or a tornado if it's sitting in this building somewhere?
I mean, the picture of
I just told
the,
you
the,
it looked...
the warehouse of just absolutely priceless memorabilia that apparently a price was somehow placed on. This dude just has this stuff.
But just remember where you heard this first. Just remember you heard this first on High Noon, because this is going to be a huge thing. Huge.
A show, a stage act, a metal band will play songs about it. Something's going to happen associated with this.
Maybe alt new glam metal if we're lucky.
Right.
But that is High Noon. Kevin Fishbane is going to join us next to give us more thoughts on the always intriguing Chicago Bears on the score.